Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to the latest episode of The Squawker Talker. My name's Jake Entwistle, and on this episode, we'll be talking about the FA Cup, European football, and introducing a new little section we've got at the end. But before we dive into all that, first let me introduce my guests. Joining me is chief writer at Squawker, Mohammed Butt.
Hey, Jake, how you doing?
How are you? Yeah.
I'm all right. I'm feeling good.
Feeling good.
A bit tired, but, you know, excited.
Still baby issues. You know, well, not issues. But
it's just, he wakes up all the time. It's like, wants food. It's like, all right, calm down.
No respect these days, that generation, do
but
they?
Hey, Champions League, back in full swing.
Ready for it. We're ready for it. And also joining me today is Mr. Sam Long. Sam, sorry about the weekend. Obviously, we hyped up Wimbledon the week you weren't on here after their win. But then Scott Wagstaff dyed his beard and you lost 1-0 to Millwall.
He didn't even play Scott Wagstaff, actually, after all that. Left him on the bench.
Imagine that. Imagine the disgrace. Hey, boss, I've dyed my beard for you. I'm ready to go.
Bench.
But just your thoughts as a fact, it's not often you have expert insight on AFC Wimbledon on a podcast. So how was that game in itself? What do you think of Wimbledon and what were Millwall like as well?
Well, it was very disappointing from a Wimbledon point of view. I think we saw in the West Ham game that one of our biggest strengths was sort of playing against a team who maybe didn't really want it, didn't want to be there. And Millwall definitely did. It was a typical sort of lower
Millwall
league game.
Millwall definitely want to be there, don't they?
So, once we went 1-0 down early, we've really struggled for goals this season, and that was sort of it, really.
Evident.
Bit of a damp squib to end the cup run on, but a decent bit of money in the coffers.
Yeah. And just a quick point on Millwall as well. Since their FA Cup final all the way back in 2004, which Neil Harris played in, which is crazy, only Man United, Man City and Arsenal have won more FA Cup games than them. So obviously that's a long period of time. But they're making another push for that FA Cup final spot. Was there anything you saw against the mighty Wimbledon that suggests they might be able to push that all the way? Just pure motivation, if anything, an old school factor.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, they're obviously struggling in the Championship. They're not an amazing team. They're solid. And I think their biggest strength is playing at the Den. Neil Harris said after the game what he wants is 20,000 fans in there playing against the Den. And who would want to come out against them from the draw, you know? No one wants them.
This is going out, obviously, one before the big game, the Chelsea-Man United game, and also before the draw itself. So, again, with Chelsea-Man United being knocked out, you've only got Man City and then it's a free-for-all.
I quite like to see City go to the Den. I think that'd be really interesting.
That would be an ultimate clash of styles, wouldn't it, and sort of philosophies. But we'll move on to some more FA Cup action later on. But from one man's mastermind subject to another, we get a lot of requests for Barcelona stuff because of your following and your knowledge, Mo. And this week, it was quite a big weekend in La Liga. Barcelona winning 1-0 against Real Valladolid. And it seems the perfect sort of microcosm of Ernesto Valverde's reign.
Ernie Valverde.
That's what he's going to be known as. I tried to whip out my Spanish pronunciation, messed that up, and then managed to get the manager's name wrong. So, good start from me, but not as bad as Luis Suarez's performance.
Bad is a weird way to put it, because on the one hand, he came on and the idea was we need more, Barcelona needed more, you know, Valverde was like, we need more dynamism up front, we need more movement up front. And he came on and he provided that. His movement was exceptional, he pressed, he harried. It was like, oh, okay, yeah, this is what, you know, Barcelona looking more like themselves again. And then his finishing was just shocking. It was literally, I mean, Boateng missed a 1-1 earlier in the game. Prince Boateng started at number 9, Messi put him through, he missed a 1-1, tried to go around the goal, he should have just shot. Jordi Masip in the goal provided, had a really good game. Former Barcelona player.
Oh yeah, he got some hugs at the end, didn't he?
Yeah, he knows all the players, you know, he's so, you know, he was in his element. He was obviously up for it, performing against his old club. Had a great game. Stopped Boateng's 1-on-1. And it was like, when Suarez came on, he's like, I don't want Boateng to feel too bad, so I'll miss the 1-on-1 as well. So Messi put him through and splonked it right at Matip. And then, but then he missed three more.
Mm. Like, well, that was the thing. That was the number for this, the standout stat for this game was four. Number of big chances missed by Luis Suarez in 30 minutes.
Yeah, and it was ridiculous. The movement was great, as I said. Yeah. He got into positions and then he would just fluff these shots, and it was almost like, it was one of those Suarez performances where you think, oh, he's going to score a worldie in a minute, because it's what he does when he has these really, misses these easy chances. You think, there's a banger coming and he's going to volley it from 20 yards or something. But he didn't end up doing that. And it was just sort of, it was really, I don't know if you call it worrying from a Barcelona perspective or not, because on the one hand, you know, you've got Lyon in the Champions League coming up, and that's a really, really tricky tie. On the other hand, and so, you know, you want your strikers in form, but on the other hand, you don't want them to blow all their goals playing at home against Valladolid, especially with the week they've got coming up. They've got Lyon, then they've got Sevilla, then they've got Real Madrid, then they've got Real Madrid again. And so it's a pretty big week.
Are they going to be able to rely on the wily old Suarez for that, do you think, now?
I mean, looks like no, but then also you look at Suarez, he has a history of just turning up in the big games, especially maybe not so much against Lyon, I don't know really, but against, in the Clasicos, he always shows up against Real Madrid.
Well, that's the thing, that he got a hat-trick, didn't he?
Yeah, he's brilliant against Real Madrid. He's a wonderful, wonderfully weird striker, as all aging world-class goal scorers are. Like, he can look absolutely pony 1 minute and then suddenly he appears nowhere and like all the ability comes back. On a reduced schedule, I think he's brilliant. Still brilliant. But you need to reduce his schedule. He can't play too much because he doesn't know how to temper himself. Like, Cristiano Ronaldo is a great example of a player who's pared down parts of his game so that he can remain ruthlessly efficient in front of goal. Yeah. Suarez doesn't know how to do that. Either he doesn't know, doesn't want to, whatever.
Can't fight the Garacharua.
Yeah, exactly. He plays 110 miles an hour all the time and it exhausts him. So that's why you have to be a manager and say, okay, Ernie, Louis, sit down. Relax.
All the nicknames.
Yeah, but no, but it's like you said, though. The game was like a microcosm of why he's got a new contract and why
That was my next question, is Ernesto Valverde at Barcelona, 68.1% win rate.
Yeah.
Picked up two trophies in his first season. Mm. Yet gets a year extension and everyone's...
It's the weird thing because he was so good in his first year as manager. Because that Barca side with no Dembele for basically two-thirds of the year, Coutinho only showed up in January and took a month to get settled. Suarez was injured for half the season. That side, the second most effective offensive weapon in that team was Paulinho for most of the campaign.
What a signing.
I mean, they had no right to win La Liga and the Copa del Rey, let alone almost do it unbeaten. Like, come within one game of doing it unbeaten.
I think that actually, even... from myself, you forget. They only lost that one, and that was the one Messi didn't play. Yeah, didn't.
The one game Messi... So Messi won the league unbeaten, but Barcelona didn't. Valverde did such a good job with that talent, with that team that had a talent deficiency, that now it's like he's almost out of his depth, because Barca were in a real problem position when he took over. Lost Neymar, you know, scrambling for positions. Real Madrid looking really dominant, just won their first league title since 2012. First league and Champions League double since 1958. Mm. So Madrid are like, oh my God, this is the Madrid era. And then he was like, actually, no, it's not. Won La Liga back. You're thinking, okay, amazing. But now Barca have great players. They've got Dembele, they've got Malcolm, they've got Coutinho, they've got talent everywhere. Semedo's settled. It's like, this is a side that's full of talent. They should be walking away, running away with La Liga. And they're only 7 points clear. Mm. You know, and it's like...
7 points is still...
This brings me on to my next point, Should Ernesto Valverde be a closet Real Madrid fan? Because a lot of the... So obviously Real Madrid this weekend, Barcelona win 1-0, Suarez misses numerous chances.
Messi missed the penalty.
But they still won. Real Madrid, on the other hand, after what we said last week and prophesied about the Ajax result, their knockout stage form took a hit with a 2-1 defeat to Girona.
Yeah.
Ramos picking up his 20th La Liga
red
card.
They were lucky it was only 2-1. They got thoroughly outplayed.
Man City loanee Douglas Luiz was receiving a lot of plaudits.
Girona are a serious team, man. They've given Barcelona two hellacious games, and they've done Real Madrid over again. But yeah, look, Madrid, It's just they're so bad. And this is what I'm saying. Sam, you said 7 points, and 7 points is a big lead, but Madrid and Atletico have been really bad this season, like really just terrible. Barcelona, if they had any sort of consistency, will be running away with La Liga. This would be like a 15-20 point gap. Now, maybe you could argue, because that doesn't happen, you know, there's sort of a regression towards, I mean, oh, well, our rivals are playing rubbish, we can afford to be a little bit rubbish ourselves. Maybe there's no pressure on them to really be consistently excellent because they've got such a big cushion. Maybe that's true, but it does look bad, the fact that Barca are still within only 3 games ahead of one of the worst Real Madrids in over a decade. Like since the end of the Florentino Perez era, when you had all the aging Galacticos, that was the last time they were, perhaps the last time they were this bad.
Well, I suppose that's the sort of nature of the rivalry, isn't it? That they're annoyed that they're potentially missing the opportunity to really rub the Madrid's noses in it.
And it's Atletico. I mean, we all.
Well, Atletico Madrid is second.
Everyone thought they were going to be the big rivals. And
they got locked to win the league.
And it's the same thing.
What do I know?
It's the same problem Simeone's always had, is that when there's actual expectation and pressure on them, they don't cope so well with it. They thrive as underdogs.
And they've got Lyon coming up. And another word you mentioned there that struck me as being important, for especially against Lyon, is control.
Yeah.
Lyon, obviously, in the Champions League this season, they went unbeaten in the group stage. Yeah. They didn't win the group in the end, but they beat Man City and drew. Memphis Depay is actually the chief chance creator in Europe this season with 76, by virtue of taking some of the set pieces. But you have to be good at taking the set pieces. Yeah. We're going to sort of address the key Champions League fixtures as we go by talking about each team. So just for this, Sam, how do you see, based on what Mo's been saying about Barcelona there, what you know of Lyon from the Champions League and their inconsistent league on form, but still they're the only team to beat PSG in league on this season through counter-attacking, through those mercurial talents up front. How do you see this one going this week?
Well, I think the draws is a big thing to mention, because realistically they need to be taking more than a draw back to the Nou Camp. I would still always back Luis Suarez in one of the biggest games. He's very much a big game player. I can't see anything other than a comfortable win for Barca.
Even at Lyon? Or do you mean over the two legs?
No, even at Lyon. 2-0, I think.
So sneaking these early... I was about to say, sneaking the early score predictions. 2-0.
Oh, I don't know about that. The thing is, Barcelona's big weakness is the counter-attack, because of the way they play. I mean, Rakitic will play, which will help negate that, because Rakitic and Busquets, as a two, are very good at stopping counters. But there's no Arthur. Arthur's injured right now. And that's a huge miss in the middle of the park. I don't know if he'll play Alenia or if he'll play Vidal. If he plays Vidal, it'll be quite fun to watch him try and physically combat Ndombele and... because that's the battle. I don't know, he's got old man strength by now, isn't he, Vidal? But he would probably still lose that battle. So I would expect Lyon will score. I think a 2-2 draw is likely. I think Barca will definitely score. I think they've got the capability to score. Dembele is getting back into fitness. Messi's getting back to sharpness after his injury problems. Suarez, as Sam says, is a big game player. Coutinho, who the hell knows, man? The guy has amazing capabilities. And he started his Barca career brilliantly in the first 6 months. I think tactical indecision over whether he's a winger or a midfielder has sort of hurt him in the start of this season, and now he just looks like he hasn't got any confidence. He looks like he's constantly trying too much. Every now and again he'll do something brilliant, like a couple of little sweet little interchange passing, quick passing moves, but mostly he just looks like he doesn't know if he's going to be a dribbler or a passer.
It must be so difficult when you've obviously got individual talent, but then you know that at the end of the day, all you should really be doing is trying to pass to Messi. It must be a weird conflict in the sense that
that's the end game.
Suarez benefits from it because he's forward of Messi and can link up, whereas Coutinho will pick it in deep, and you look up and you're like, Messi's open.
No, but if you look at how Dembele is figured out, even Dembele's sussed it out already. It's like, yeah, you pass to Messi, but then you make runs off the ball. And then when Messi is making runs into the middle of it, you dominate the ball.
Yeah, Dembele looks bright even with Messi on the pitch.
But Coutinho hasn't quite sussed that out yet. And I don't know why that is, because he seemed to have it figured last season. But it's like something is in his head. When he gets it, it's almost like, I've got to be Neymar now. He tries to dribble everyone. It's like, that's not your game. Dribble one guy and make a pass. And then
keep scoring from outside the box.
Well, that's the other thing, is that Liga defenders appear to have sussed out that he cuts it on his right foot and shoots with them. They just stand in front of him like, no, you can't shoot there, mate. But, you know, I mean...
That trademark move isn't working in
the league. Yeah, I mean, I'll be interested to see, though, because Maxwell Cornet, obviously, going back to Lyon, Maxwell Cornet exposed the hell out of Fabian Delph, right? Running in behind him. And
unlikely to even play, though, really, for Lyon.
I mean,
like they could use him, but yeah. I'm not sure of his injury history, and but he's not being used often. Fakir's in full flow. Not. Bertrand Traore's back, who fulfills the same role.
Yeah, yeah.
But lightning counters.
I just want to see how they handle getting in behind Jordi Alba, because Alba does need space, but he also has rocket pace to get in behind them. But exposing the fullbacks could be very interesting for Lyon. Just give Sergio Roberto, please. Yeah.
So you thought Tool. So Tool is what I'm leaning for, because I like Lyon's attack, and I love that midfield pairing. And if they turn up, and they have done in the big games this season, they could, as you said, expose that counter-attack. But the next topic in our standout stats is the Champions League game that's on alongside Barcelona. And it's obviously Liverpool and Bayern Munich at Anfield. No Van Dijk. But the player that I actually want to focus on is a certain Joshua Kimmich, who this weekend became the third player to provide 10 league assists in Europe's top five divisions.
He's a rat
alongside Lionel Messi and Eden Hazard, the only two that have done it. Second consecutive season in which he's provided 10 assists. Obviously dabbles in midfield a bit.
He plays
again takes corners, but you have to be good at those corners, as I will hammer home. And on the other side of the pitch is another young right back that can play in midfield, and that takes a very nice set piece in Trent Alexander-Arnold.
England's Kimmich confirmed.
Yeah, so basically, just a breakdown of this game. First of all, what are your thoughts on Kimmich in terms of, if I said best right back in the world, is he there, or is it a virtue of being in that strong Bayern team?
I think he is. I mean, the guy who was the best right back in the world, Carvajal, has been so racked by injury and form, poor form this season. He's no competition, and that's it, really. It's a weird sort of dearth of right backs. Walker as well was another one, but again, poor form.
Inconsistencies.
Those were the two guys last season that stood out above everyone else. Dani Alves obviously still has it on his day. He's still unplayable, but he's also 35 years old.
He's old.
Trippier.
I think we sort of joked about that and the euphoria of the World Cup, but that he's definitely now out of the mix, I think, this season. If you say that to Spurs fans, they will assure you that he is not to be considered one of the best.
Yeah, no, for me, the only two that were better than Kimmich by virtue of being pure all-round right-back talents were Carvajal and Walker. Neither of them have had a good season. I don't think you could argue with Kimmich being the best in the world right now.
And Trent as well. Will he have eyes on being that best right-back in the world? Because I love the way he operates in that Liverpool team, in the sense that when he plays with James Milner especially, James Milner obviously fulfilled roles at right-back in his absence. But when they play, Alexander-Arnold moves into midfield to play those deep passes across field to Mane, and Milner almost fills in at fullback. So although I'm saying that, Alexander, the heir to this versatile Bayern Munich wonder kid that they have, at the same time, Trent looks like he slowly wants to be fulfilling that midfield role that he famously has done for the academy side.
You could certainly see him maybe moving forward there later in his career.
Yeah. So that's the question. Is obviously with Wijnaldum, Fabinho, Keita, Oxlade-Chamberlain, there's a lot of people to get through in that case. So right back is where he's going to get his minutes, but it just seems to me that he has all of the tools to become that centre midfielder. And I think Gary Lineker even said during Champions League coverage, during group stage, that he had too much talent to be wasted at right back, which was sort of tongue in cheek, because fullbacks are so important to the modern day.
It's a bit of a misunderstanding of how fullback works.
I think he was aware of that. He just meant that you'd want Alexander on the ball so much. And that's the same with Kimmich. Is they tried him again in midfield at the beginning of the season when Kovac was experimenting, but they've had to move him back to right back because their other option is Rafinha, who they also need to cover left back when there's no injuries. So the inconsistencies
they have. He's also just really good at right back. People need to understand that football.
Well, at the World Cup.
Yeah.
The only problem was with Kimmich being that good at right back was that Germany had
no one in midfield.
They had no one sussed out to cover those gaping holes that he left.
Yeah.
But because he was their chief attacking outlet.
Yeah.
Whereas Bayern, again, that I don't think they've really sussed it out. And Liverpool are the one team you don't want to play if you're leaving gaps to counter-attack.
That's what I was going to say, basically. The key to this game, because there's two things. Obviously, Van Dijk isn't there, so Liverpool... I mean, Kimmich should just be pinging low crosses across the... Because it might be like clears about...
Just any crosses.
Any crosses, but especially low ones, because I think Lovren likes it in the... He can handle it in the air. Matip definitely...
Well, I was going to say,
Lovren's
let's establish that before we Lovren's dive deeper playing, in it. Yeah. Lovren's not there. Van Dijk's suspended. Reported this morning that it's going to be Fabinho and Matip.
And they're both very good in the air.
Too lanky.
Yeah. So I was going to say, play
on
the ground.
Too lanky players.
Because they're both going to have struggles on the ground. I mean, you know, Van Dijk clears low crosses. I mean, again, remember against Man City, how many low crosses did he clear before Aguero scored that goal when it went away from him? Didn't even get to him. So I think Kimmich and Alaba, whoever plays left back for Bayern, if Koeman plays him too, low crosses, just low crosses, kill Liverpool like that. But Liverpool have to counter-attack, use Robbo, that never-ending runner, Andy Robertson, and Mane to just pin Kimmich back in his own defence or destroy him from the space that he leaves behind him.
Yeah.
Because either the space will be there or you can push Kimmich back into his own defence. If Liverpool can do that, they can shut down a huge part of what makes this current Bayern dangerous. And that will also obviously protect the fact that their defensive genius isn't there, and neither is their second best defender or their third best defender.
I think the start of the game is going to be so interesting to see how Liverpool sort of come out, because obviously they've had a bit of a break before this game. I think they're going to be really raring to go. That first 20 minutes, I think it's going to be sort of decides the game.
The first 20 minutes TM. Liverpool. That's what they do.
That's an Anfield speciality. Yeah. They come flying out of the traps, and they catch a lot of big European sides. Like, what the hell's going on here? They catch them by surprise. If Bayern, who are full of old stages, who have kind of seen it all, if they can handle themselves in that first 20, you might even back them to come away with a good result. But it's whether they can survive that, because there's a lot of old players in that Bayern team. There's a lot of old players there.
Ribery, one of the old players, and probably wouldn't be that much to do with the defensive solidities out. Boateng is out.
Yeah.
Robin has said that his worst stadium, and I think his quote's got a bit, I think a lot of people said it's the worst stadium, whereas he's saying
it's his worst
stadium. So he's not looking forward to it. Shaqiri, on the other hand, is very looking forward to play Bayern Munich, which I found interesting. Said that he'd always go back, which is not necessarily what you always want to hear from the player that he might be used.
I think it was interesting that Robin sort of brought that up. I probably would have kept that to myself.
Yeah, and Robin again has been criticised in the World Cup. He's had games where, mate, you should have, if you picked up, you would have played well.
But in that interview as well, he got asked about a sort of trademark move. And he sat back and said that that's something that he's proud of. So don't rule out a trademark Robin. Yeah.
Well, if Coutinho might have lost his, Liverpool will be introduced to another person bending it in the top corner, from the other side of the pitch.
Was going to suss out that trademark, it would have been Van Dijk, right? His compatriot would have been like, no, I know what you're going to do there. Block it. Now it's like Matip and Fabinho. Can he tempt one of them to dangle a leg out, get away a free kick or a penalty?
Well, this is the thing as well. And if we're talking about Kimmich and being pinned back by Robertson, Kimmich is going to try and pin them back. It's going to be an absolute who can get furthest forward.
That's the key. That's the key battle zone.
And that'll be key in taking Robertson away from Robin, allowing Robin to move in.
Also,
if
Fabinho's in central defence, that means he's not in midfield, which means there's a big chance for Bayern, if it's Thiago, if it's James, whoever the hell it is, to stamp their authority on central midfield, because without Fabinho in there, that's a big, I mean, I assume Henderson will play then, which is like, I mean, that's a very passable dam, isn't it? That's a dam that cracks all over it. You can get plenty of water through there. So,
and the final piece in this puzzle before we move on to predictions for this game, Robert Lewandowski. Again, we're talking about these aging strikers, someone that's been touted as maybe drifting into his non-elite status, still scoring goals, but not reliable to have as your number nine for the whole season for every competition. He's the leading goal scorer in the Champions League this season, with 8 goals. He's never hit 10 for Bayern in the Champions League, but did for Dortmund. Is this his final year as an elite forward? Is one question. And two, can you see him having an impact, especially with Van Dijk out, in this first leg at Anfield?
I can definitely see him having an impact if it's going to be Fabinho at centre-back. I mean, he's a player who is constantly sort of being written off. And I think it's because Bayern haven't really got anyone who's sort of waiting in the wings.
Sandro Wagner, literally wearing the number 2 on his back, decided to leave Bayern Munich again in January.
So, yeah, I mean, it looks like Lewandowski's days are probably numbered, but then I'm certainly not going to sit here and write him off in the big games. I think he can definitely score against Liverpool.
The thing with Lewandowski is it's the same reason with Suarez. When you look at people who primarily trade in goals, it's very easy to sort of forget that they're there. that he's not playing particularly well, Lewandowski. Let's just forget that he's actually great. You don't have to play great to score goals, as Harry Kane showed in the World Cup. you can play terribly and score goals, and Lewandowski still has that ability. Without Matip, without Van Dijk, without Lovren, without Gomez, he should have a field day against those two. Not that he can't really necessarily overpower them physically. It's not one of those kind of matches, but I think positionally he should be absolutely
just that nous.
Rings around them. It's just about whether or not Bayern can get him the right service, because he's not going to physically dominate them like he would maybe even, let's say, Joe Gomez, who's a shorter guy. So Fabinho will match him physically, and so will Matip, really. But it's about positionally; those guys can't touch him. If he's clever, and also,
that's lethal in the box.
That's
isn't
what
it?
You don't lose, no matter your age. You do not lose that one instinct. And as well, we're saying, he's 31 in August, so he's not. We've seen strikers.
He's also a very, very clever player with very good playmaking ability. So I would not be surprised if he maybe doesn't necessarily score himself, but sets up a lot of chances. Kingsley Coman, in particular, coming in off the right flank or coming in through the right flank. Could benefit hugely because I think Coman's very quick, and that's always
I think that was a big one. He obviously was instrumental in their turnaround at the weekend.
Yeah,
injured again, which is sadly defining his career at the moment. But it looks like it's not a bad one, and he could play.
Yeah.
And I think him being there again, it's these things about as you said, Mo, about these pinning of each other back. Bayern aren't going to be good at defending.
No.
And Liverpool they are good at it, but only when Van Dijk's there to organise it, perhaps, is a fair thing to say. So I think we could end up having a really open, classic hashtag European night at Anfield.
It would be nice. It would be
Where they're both going to be knowing that, again, cliche, that their offence will be their best way of stopping the other person attack. Whether that becomes just counter-attack after counter-attack could be dangerous.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Bayern will be very aware that they can definitely get at that Liverpool team. And they definitely won't want Salah and company getting at their defence.
I think another key thing is as well, so the fact that we're even asking these questions of Lewandowski and Robin, and potentially it could be their last chance, they'll know that when they go on the pitch, that this could be the last Champions League knockout game that I play if I get moved on.
Robin specifically, I think, I don't know if he's actually, Ribéry and Robin have both said that it's probably going to be their last year, either in football or Bayern. So both are on the verge of retirement, but unquestioned talents. And just looking at Lewandowski, last year as an elite striker, I've said, 25 goals in 30 games this season, which for someone who apparently has not been very good is a phenomenal record.
Bayern aren't very good. That's his problem. Yeah. It's the same old thing. You put him back in a functioning Bayern side, he'd hit 30 goals.
Yeah,
he's going to hit 30 goals anyway.
I'd love to see him come to the Premier League.
At 30 years old, I don't think anyone's picking him up.
I'd say Everton would take him with that.
Back in 2009-10 when he was meant to be going to Blackburn, I think maybe I don't think Lewandowski's going to think, do you know what, I want a really tumultuous career at Everton where all the fans get really annoyed and I have seven different managers. So I think he's obviously achieved a level where he could go to another club, another top club.
Well, Real Madrid were linked for ages.
Well, that's
them?
The thing, and they're looking for this. Arsenal
but Florentino Perez has been has backed Karim Benzema now. So
again, we're talking about Champions League records. Obviously, we didn't get to speak about all those Champions League games, and they're so far in the past now that we might as well be talking about the second legs. But Lewandowski, 53 goals in 78 Champions League games, which is incredible.
Yeah.
At 0.68, Benzema 0.54. But 60 in 111, and only four players have scored 60 Champions League era goals, and he's now one of them.
Benzema is like, he's had this such a bizarre career where he's been absolutely world class for ages, and no one talks about him at all because obviously he's been dwarfed by goal scoring achievements of other players. And unfortunately for him as well, to be fair, he does have this really weird propensity to miss easy chances, like really simple ones. You think, what the hell are you drunk? Are you blind? But he's again decisive against Ajax, and he'll probably be decisive again in the second leg. He has a habit of showing up in big games, so you know he's another great player.
For the next section on the podcast, we're going to be doing the Squawker Scout. And although we've tried many times to introduce this, we are definitely going to keep it this time. And what I'm going to be asking the guests to do each week is picking out a performance from the weekend that took their eye. They can be a young player, they can be an experienced pro like Lewandowski, but someone that caught their attention and deserved a 5-minute segment on the Squawker to talk about. Easy for me to say. First up, we're going to go to Sam, and you're... you're diving back into the FA Cup with your pick, it looks like. And I'll let you introduce him. Who was the guy that turned your head this weekend?
I've gone for Phil Foden, Jake. First of all, it was just brilliant to see him play 90 minutes. Obviously, there's so much hype about him, but really we've been quite starved of seeing him on a regular basis because obviously City's team is pretty difficult to get into. And he's actually only played 93 minutes of Premier League football this season and is still waiting for that very first top flight start. So he started a midfield three against Newport. Brought a real touch of class in midfield.
On a pitch where it was difficult.
Exactly, yeah. Gliding across the turf as best you can when you're playing in a cabbage patch.
Yeah.
Took both his goals very well. So City won 4-1, scored two. It was really good to see him making those sort of bursting, driving runs forward and then taking the shot on. So yeah, it was just brilliant to see him play, really. And I'm desperate to see him make that first start now because I feel like he's right on the edge of the team, and it's coming for him.
It's so difficult, as you alluded to, when you've got Bernardo Silva, who came in to fill that role, who will play definitely ahead of him. David Silva, De Bruyne is back. He almost missed the chance to get a few. Well, he's the chance where he was most likely to get a few starts has now passed, and now it's where do you see him coming in?
But yeah.
As you mentioned for the goals, that dribbling ability that has been so evident in every game he's played, I think, when he was in the under-17 World Cup winning squad, got the golden ball for that. He actually played on the right and dribbled in. So I don't know whether with... Even Riyad Mahrez can't get games, but I don't know if Pep could start using him in that right wing role to get some minutes.
Perhaps, yeah. And I mean, I looked ahead and sort of thought, is he going to get his chance to start in the Champions League after playing so well in midweek? And then it's... at the weekend, sorry. And you look at the players they've got to come back, Aguero, Sterling, he's not going to start that game against Schalke. And it must be really difficult to sit there knowing that even if you do play well, that in that next game, you're not going to get that run. He's just not quite there.
I think if they smash Schalke, though, which I think they probably will do, he might play in the return leg. That's the thing, because the return leg's at home, isn't it? So if they really get a good away win... in Germany, then he might come out for the second. The thing is, I like Foden to it, and also I'm kind of glad that he's not putting him in this season because this is the second season syndrome. We're trying to retain title. It's very City are coming in for a lot. There's a lot of pressure on them, a lot of media scrutiny on them. So it's like if you put Foden into this, if he makes any mistake or any underperformances, it's going to affect him even more. There's going to be a lot more criticism of it. I like the idea of bringing him in a little bit first season, a little bit more now, and then next season, like third season, you start him. Because then it's either you've lost the title out and you have to win it back, and then he has something to chase, and it's like and City are the underdogs again, or you won it twice in a row. You're the first team since 2009 to retain the title, and it's like and now it's the era of Foden. Yeah. You know,
but then that's a risky strategy as well, though, because if you don't give him enough minutes this season, then next season he might feel like he's in a bit too deep, and then if you come into the team, so say they started him first four games at the start of next season. Yeah. And he maybe had three bad games, that's almost his chance gone then. You can't really recover from that.
He danced around Chelsea in the Community Shield, and that's where we all thought he was going to play this season. Because obviously he's got... If you look at the team that he was in and sort of his closest rivals and the teenage talents that are around him, English teenage talents, you've got Jadon Sancho, we know what he's doing. We've spoken about him enough, getting the minutes. But Foden's got a better go of it than Hudson-Odoi, you'd argue. So... Despite being so few in those minutes for a top team, the value of him...
He's very young. He's still very young.
It's not... I think 18... Because football itself has sort of gone down in sort of the age where people seem to be peaking. Like 26 now, you're thinking, yeah, that's bang on. But that's so young. We're talking about Lewandowski being 30. Foden's 12 years younger than him, and someone that we're not saying is still going up, really, or just about to go down. So he is so young. And it was funny, he started one game in the group stage against Hoffenheim, which Man City won. But before that, he'd lost the two Champions League games he'd started for Man City. They were both dead rubbers. One was against Shakhtar.
But then that's it with minutes. If you're giving people minutes and you're only getting dead rubbers, so like you say about the second leg, then that can also... he's not getting the pressurized environment that he needs to develop. And it's like the classic, should he go on loan or shouldn't he? Obviously, Guardiola said that there were approaches, but he values him too highly to let him go on loan. But then I sort of think that if you're getting so few minutes, then it would almost be more valuable to go on loan and get 30, 40 games under your belt. And then he'd be in a stronger position in next season.
So that was my next question, is obviously Man City are still in every competition and still very much with a chance of winning them all. Phil Foden so far, as all his goals are coming in the domestic cup.
Yep.
He's got 5, which is pretty nice. It's a pretty nice tally for an 18-year-old to have for a Man City side. Obviously, as you said, 2 very nice goals against Newport. Do you think that he should be trying to balance this many competitions? Although they are going to be just domestic cup minutes, the final's coming up. What about is he going to start in that final? They just thumped Chelsea 6-0 anyway. They don't need to play the best team again, surely. Surely that'll be a time where we can really see Pep Guardiola's trust in Foden if he starts a domestic final.
I think that would be perfect. I think that would be a perfect opportunity for him. And that's the sort of thing that will be a sort of a real statement for Foden to make. And so if at the end of the season, even if they do win a load of trophies, and he's sitting there thinking, oh, I maybe haven't played as many minutes as I wanted, but then if he's been given an opportunity to play in the final, then that's another
feather in his cap.
Exactly.
I wasn't trying to interrupt. I was going to say that he's obviously got a winner's medal for the Premier League last season because he played enough. We're still not sure what the actual rules are for that.
It used to be 10, I think now it's 5.
It was used to be 5, and then it was just like you can give out 30 or something.
I think they get a big
they get a collection, you dish them out like throwing a bouquet behind you at a wedding for the last one, all the reserves scrambling over it.
Because as well, I think the way that the narrative is developing in terms of Sancho going abroad and getting his minutes, it must be difficult to be a young player and sort of have all that going on around you but know that you aren't quite getting those minutes.
But this is, it's funny turn of events as well, because Phil Foden got all of the recognition for England's just that summer where they won every U tournament pretty much. Phil Foden got it all because the Under-17 World Cup was final and he won the Golden Ball, and Sancho got none of it, then went abroad, and now he's getting the recognition. They both deserve it. They're both incredible talents. They'll both be features of the England team for the next 10 years. But it's so interesting to see how they're sort of wrestling the spotlight from each other, not in a malicious or rival sort of way, but they've trodden very different paths, and you just hope that both of them lead to that sort of starting berth.
Yeah, I think as well, really, we should be championing Foden almost getting through at Man City. Everyone should be wanting him to get through, because although it's great that people have decided to go abroad, we still need English players to be coming through at English clubs. And
there's nothing better than seeing him score in the FA Cup, and Man City fans obviously love it. So
he needs a better shirt number though, man. Come on, 47.
We had to finish on that, didn't we?
Not having it.
In fact, actually, you might not know it yet, but you've given me the perfect segue for your Squawker Scout, because the person that you've sent to me wears the number 29 shirt, which is undoubtedly, if you're a young player and you want to just become a future world beater, wear the number 29, because I can send you a list privately if you want. Get in touch after the Squawker Talker. The players that wear the number 29 are really, really good. The OG being a certain Mbappe, who's transitioned to number 7.
Yeah.
So he's done what Mo would like and gone to a normal number.
Good man.
But he wore the 29. And I'll stop blabbering on about that number and let you talk about the number 29 you've picked for your segment on the Squawker Scout.
I mean, where do you begin?
With his name?
Wait, Kai Havertz.
I thought
you'd introduced him.
Kai Havertz. He was known as for number 29.
Bayer Leverkusen's number 29, who's 20 years old in June. So he's still a teenager, 19 years old. And speaking of Mbappe, by virtue of OG number 29's
December birthday,
20th Kai Havertz is now the top scoring teenager in Europe's top 5 leagues with 9 Bundesliga goals, which is 2 more than anyone else, right? So, and this is an attacking midfielder. He's not a striker, not a winger, not a wing forward. There's attacking midfielder, number 10, number 8, a creative kind of midfielder. The guy who would be one of what Guardiola calls a 3-8. We had 10 and a 4-2-3. One could play in a 3 and a 4-3-3. Really sort of all around midfield talent. So I say 9 Bundesliga goals, that's the most among teenagers in Europe's top five leagues. 29 take-ons completed, that's joint second in Europe's top five leagues, behind only the aforementioned Jadon Sancho.
Yeah. Who's top of Bundesliga in entirety.
Yes, in its entirety, you know, because he's playing in a counter-attacking system and you know, he's a brilliant dribbler. And then he has 21 key passes, which is fifth, which is not, that's not that glamorous, but fifth combined with first for goals and second for dribbles. That gives you a picture of how good this kid is. If you, and I mean, if the stats don't do it for you, just go watch him. Watch some, watch some YouTube highlights. He's so elegant, such a crisp player, so clean. His technique is wonderful. He drifts between lines very smartly. Leverkusen really know how to. I mean, they surround him. It's a brilliant setup because he plays in the middle of Leon Bailey and Julian Brandt, so pace, and Kevin Volland ahead of him, pace and a bit of power. So there's a lot. They play direct. You know, they play very quick. Leverkusen.
Well, they've perhaps retracted that a bit now that Bosch has come in.
Well, they play a bit. There's more passing. Of what I mean,
passing.
I was going to say, if anyone noticed at the weekend where they played, they had an astounding number of passes. They had five players completing over 100, attempting over 100 passes, completing over 100 passes. You know, poor Havertz. You know, pathetic attempt of only attempted 92 and he completed 81. He's useless.
What a fraud.
Richard Weiss, 102 of 110. Charles Arangues, a legend that he is, 116 of 125. Dragovic, the centre back, 170 of 178. Jonathan Tarr, my man Jonathan Tarr, love this guy, great centre back. 195 passes completed, 202 attempted.
I think that is the third most on record.
It's just absurd.
Beaten by Julian Weigl under Tuchel, which shock.
Yeah.
And Xabi Alonso under Pep,
which
double shock.
Yeah, it's just a staggering number of passes. So yeah, Havertz is playing in a system that values the ball. They value the ball. I mean, you could honestly, you could play him at six at Havertz, I reckon, and it would be probably not the best idea defensively, but like with the ball, he could easily handle playing there in a possession based system.
If Arsenal are looking for this midfielder that can do a bit of every little thing and puts in a bit of effort as well, then you've got your Aaron Ramsey replacement staring you in the face. No?
I mean, yeah, exactly. This is the thing. The best way I could describe Havertz for Premier League fans is that this is the kind of player that Arsene Wenger had five of when he was like 10 years ago. You know, it's the Arsenal midfielder. He's small. He's not physically...
He's not small.
He's not physically slight. He actually is 6'2"
tall.
Slight. But I suppose even that is Arsene Wenger classic, because you think of Vieira, you think of Adu.
That's original Wenger.
Yeah, you know, so tall, but not beefy. So, you know, he's slight. He's very technically adept, absurdly technically adept. So comfortable on both feet. So comfortable with the ball. You know, just dribbling with the ball. Carries it well. Shoots well. Passes well. Can do a bit of everything. You could absolutely see him fitting right into that Arsenal side. You know, even you talk about Aaron Ramsey, maybe another left-footed Arsenal creator, you know, is perhaps...
Well, that's the thing, is if Mesut Ozil's so...
If he's on the way out, you know, and if he's on the way...
Favoured, I don't think that's a word.
If he's on the way out, it's because of stylistic changes, right? Ozil doesn't play well in the high-tempo Emery kind of football. Havertz does.
Well, that's what I mean. Havertz really has played Havertz has played in a Bayer Leverkusen team that lives a counterattack, and that's where Leon Bailey came to the fore, because he used to get the ball, run, score, and Havertz was there to. Now with Bosch coming in, you're retracting. You're playing a more possession style. Like, a counterattacking team does not have their centre back play 200 passes.
No.
Whoever they play against,
exactly.
And although it was against Dusseldorf, who have done well this season, it's not that they're a bad team necessarily. But the thing that would obviously, it probably is a dream scenario given the rumoured lack of a war chest that will be in the summer, and someone like Havertz is going to command a big old fee. Bayern Munich obviously probably be sniffing around that, given the fact that he's one of the Bundesliga's top talents. But Germany themselves, they've been looking for that. Havertz will be a feature of that senior team looking to rebuild. Alongside Goretzka, who we didn't mention in the Bayern Munich talk, who's found a bit of a goal-scoring touch, which he was known for at Schalke. So those two German midfielders are not... They're the new age. None of them are... Havertz has been touted as like a Mesut Ozil replacement because of that left foot, because of the silky play, but the goal-scoring touch...
It's hard to say. He looks kind of like young Ozil, when Ozil was a bit quicker, a bit more of a fleet-footed winger who could create but could also score. It's very hard to be what Ozil turned into. It's very hard for any sort of player to be, because it's apart from Lionel Messi, I've never seen a player so consistently able to create chances for other people. Like, he's just, it's ridiculous the angles he sees, the passes he can make. it's almost impossible to say, oh, he'll be like that. Because
yeah, well, what I was saying is I actually disagree anyway, because I think that takes away Havertz's value as this scoring, which again is what Aaron Ramsey.
Like I
said,
if you remember Ozil for Bremen, it's kind of like that. That if you want to compare him to any kind of Ozil, it's that kind of Ozil. It's the young
first gen,
quick, very eye for goal, eye for pass, that sort of thing. Not what Ozil became at Madrid and at Arsenal. Mm. That's something completely.
Which is still a brilliant player.
Yes.
It's but now he can't get in the side. Yes. Which is again a podcast in itself.
It really is.
Obviously, something that happened while we didn't record the last one is Arsenal lost 1-0 in Belarus without him, which. Mesut Ozil would be sipping that little tea if he could send out a little gif himself.
I worked that game and it looked very much like, okay, this side, if you put Ozil in this team, they'd be good.
Well, Guendouzi, and guess what number he was, 29.
Yes.
bears so much of the creative burden when Ozil doesn't play, and that's
it's not
Guendouzi,
really fair.
And he's so forward thinking when he passes, but execution at the moment needs tweaking, but he's got the number 29, so he's going to be good. Guaranteed. So does Havertz. And to round the Squawk Scout section up is I'm going to be a little menace and do my own pick. And it's someone that is so fun to watch right now purely because of the hype around him.
But doesn't wear 29.
He wears number 19 because he was told he had to earn the number 9 shirt.
Which he has done.
He's done already. And this is, and if you haven't guessed already, this is Christoph Piontek, AC Milan striker, moved from Genoa. He's got 25 goals in 26 games for Genoa and Milan, and this is his first season in one of Europe's top five divisions. Since joining the club, he scored 6 of AC Milan's 9 goals. They signed him for over €35 million because of the Higuain moving to Chelsea, but Leonardo and co in that AC Milan back room must be laughing their heads off, because AC Milan looked transformed since signing him, and alongside Lucas Paqueta, who they bought in January but was agreed way before that, Gattuso looks like he's finally found a side that functions well. They had a really consistent form of not conceding many goals at all. Again, not dominating the ball in itself, but they've found a team that wins the ball back aggressively, and now they have someone that, if Higuain in his pomp was one of the most ruthless finishes around, despite big games before Mo jumps in there.
Big cup games, not big league games. He's very good in big league games.
They've now got the second coming of that in someone that does not need many chances to score. And when we analysed him at the beginning of the season, we thought, no one scores in their first 10 games and continues that. And yes, he hasn't continued it necessarily, but 17 Serie A goals is only behind Cristiano Ronaldo on 19. As I said, 25 and 26. And what makes Piontek so interesting, and this is sort of real modern football analysis, is the sense that his celebration has become one of the most marketable things in football at the moment. AC Milan and AC Milan fans have their own chant for his gunman celebration, firing it off, and it's a pom 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 every time he scores. Piontek is a good age for football at the moment, but €35 million, that's enough to be it for AC Milan to make a big profit on.
He's a £100 million player. Once when they next, if they sell him next, if, as long as this doesn't sort of form, doesn't drop off a cliff, £100 million easy.
Well, that's what I mean, and that's what imagine. So Real Madrid again, constantly linked to a striker. Barcelona, we've been talking about a Luis Suarez replacement. You buy someone that Lewandowski as well has that celebration. You have that sort of thing, but he's got a new Polish rival. Piontek's come in, scoring more goals at a faster rate, and as even though he crosses his arms in a similar fashion, he's added that one bit of flair, and I'm doing it as I'm talking because I'm very much swayed by this player.
It's a great celebration. It really, and it's like you say, the potential to become a meme is, I mean, it already is really, but it's
not a meme because that's negative.
Well,
it's
viral
everyone,
then.
Yeah, he's gone viral.
A spin-off song maybe.
Well, that's the thing is, I sadly and tragically was trying to like face swap his head onto the fire in the booth about the ting goes skrrt, because then it goes pop, 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 which is his celebration.
Yeah.
Which genuinely, like, that is a meme in itself. And that, for a player to be able to do that in the modern game, makes your social media account fly through the roof. Mm-hmm. AC Milan, since signing him, I bet their engagement has increased massively. And this is a very, this is not what, might not be what Squawk Talk listeners tune in for, but in Piontek, you've got a guy, his two goals at the weekend were incredible. The first to equalise against Atalanta, who dominated the ball crossed in from the left back, and it was sort of behind him, steals in front of the defender, movement, tick, flicks it around with his left foot, technique, tick, weak foot, tick, goes in, goal, tick, which is the biggest tick of them all that you can have. It's, for this it's
celebration, tick.
And then celebration, knee double slide.
Tick, double tick.
The whole stadium, I got fooled by the social media, and I thought once that a video that they'd actually, the fans had done it in time with the celebration, but they'd dubbed it over. But that in itself is just a reason why.
It look at him, what it's funny, because we were saying at the start of the season what it looked like, because obviously when he had that great run, everyone was like, oh, he's linking with this player, link with this team. And it was like, all he does is score goals. Let's see if he keeps it up. And the thing is, he has done.
Yeah.
And he doesn't necessarily have the creative chops of, let's say, a Lewandowski or a Luis Suarez, right? In that sense, where they're all round number nines. And so you look at, if you just want someone to score goals, which, for example, as we mentioned, Real Madrid just wants someone to score goals, he's exactly that. He will just come, lead the line. He's big, he's strong, he's fast. He scores goals, both feet, with his head. Literally, you just score goals. And if you have a team that's very creative, it just can't score goals, which actually is what Milan were, even with Higuain. They had very creative side.
Suso.
Couldn't score goals, except for Suso. Now they have a number nine that can bang them in, and it's transformed them. And you look at Chelsea, they could just...
That's the thing is, Milan fans are absolutely in hysterics over the fact that Chelsea chose Higuain over Piontek. He's obviously available, €35 million, for a striker that is, as I said, he's got 25 goals already this season. The transitions he's making and how quick he's making them from Polish league, in which he banged them in for fun. Genoa, oh, I'll just score in my first 10 games and I score 14 in total. Oh, I'll go to Milan, another big team. They're not even going to give me the number nine. Do you know what? I'm just going to score six. My first five games.
And the thing is, we're talking about him being popular. The Polish diaspora in London would go crazy if this guy showed up. Because he's so good. Imagine him in playing for Chelsea, just hammering in goals. You can see it as well with the way that... Eden Hazard is such a creative player, right? You put Eden Hazard with someone who's as relentless of a goal scorer as Piontek, and it's like, wow.
Well, this is the thing. I don't think he'd move to Chelsea now.
No, not now.
I can see people like me... short of breath talking about him and the impact he's had as a player, people might get caught up in his furor, and we could see another summer bid. AC Milan, they wouldn't want to, but if they get offered €80 million, Piontek's gone.
They're not in a position to turn
they're not
that
in a
down,
position,
really.
It seems bizarre that's feasible, but given the popularity he has, the finishing ability he has, I wouldn't put it past him. And just a quick word on Milan's midfield. The best thing about this as well is there's a picture of Kaká and Shevchenko celebrating, where Shevchenko jumps on Kaká's shoulders. Kaká, long, dark Brazilian, dark hair Brazilian. Paqueta, dark hair Brazilian.
Yeah.
There's a picture of Piontek jumping on his back. So Milan fans think they've got their Shevchenko and Kaká back. And based on how they're both playing at the moment, if they get a good run and stay together for a while, you might be talking about this duo for much longer. Tomoe Bakayoko. It's funny what a bit of confidence does. Now looks like the man we saw at Monaco.
All the Chelsea links today.
All the Chelsea links. But none of them play for Chelsea.
No.
Which they're probably annoyed about. But that wraps up Score Scout section. I know I've gone crazy on Piontek there.
Justifiably so. Even though he doesn't wear number 29.
No, number 19, there's a 9 in it. I'll have to investigate his shirt number history to see if it was foretold in his shirt number stars. The final bit of previous content we're going to do is talk about the final Champions League prediction, just to make a complete set. We're not going to dwell it too long. Schalke Man City, we never got around to, so let's start with that. I think we all agree that's going to be a win. Man City.
I mean, Ralph Farman will prove a much sterner test than Joe Day in the Newport County goal. But 4-1, 5-1, 5-0 even maybe.
City
way too good for Schalke.
Sam?
I was going to go 4-2 actually.
4-2? An absolute... Tune into that one. I think it will just be 2-0 to Man City. Away from home, job done. Phil Foden masterclass at the Etihad. But the final game that we haven't touched on at all, we spoke about Atletico Madrid versus Juventus. I don't want to spend too long on it because I want to get our new bit of content in. Jan Oblak, 80 clean sheets and 140 La Liga games after the weekend. One of the best around. Griezmann, 130 goals for Atleti now. That's like Diego Simeone's blueprint at the moment. have a really good goalkeeper, have a really good goalkeeper and someone to score you big goals. Griezmann's doing that, Oblak's doing that. And they're against you, Ronaldo and co.
I mean, that's you. I mean, look, on paper, I would say that should be a really even match, but Cristiano Ronaldo absolutely loves it against Atletico Madrid. It's historically phenomenal record against them.
It's at the Wanda.
And for that reason only, I can't see Atletico even standing a chance. I'd love them to really give Madrid a Juve game. And I think on paper they probably will. I think the performance wise they probably will, but I think ultimately they are very vulnerable to that man, and I think he will hurt them once again.
Well, when Ronaldo is willing to alter his celebration to incorporate a fellow teammates, he knows something's going on. Him and Dybala rocking the crossover at the moment. With the mask / the sue. So that's pretty dangerous. you don't need stats to tell you that Dybala and Ronaldo are in the mood at the moment. So at the Wanda, first up, what do you think the score is going to be?
I think 1-0 Ronaldo with the goal.
Seems sensible. I think first leg, I can see Atletico Madrid getting one. So I'm going to say 1-1. No, what was your score?
2-1, I think. Juventus. I can see Atletico getting one, like you say. I think maybe Griezmann with a penalty or something like that. But
classic.
Then at the same time, Cristiano Ronaldo, 2 goals. He loves it against two Atletico goals. Madrid.
You just know he's going to score.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Loves the knockout rounds. Loves Atletico Madrid.
Yep.
Written in the stars. And finally, the moment you've been waiting for, even though you didn't know you were waiting for it, is a new section on the Scorker Talker podcast that I'm going to be calling Firing Blanks. And we're not an out-of-form striker. I'm going to be asking the two guests questions on filling in the blanks, pretty much. I don't think it's a unique concept, but everyone loves doing it. So questions from football around the world at the moment, talking points, and it's just a quick way to rattle through some of the stories that we didn't get to dive into earlier in the podcast. And the first one I'm going to start with is the following. Gareth Bale's Real Madrid career has been a blank.
Success.
Success from Sam.
How can it not be with four Champions Leagues?
Because all he does is play golf and go to bed early. No?
Enigma.
How can his career be an enigma?
Well, you know, he's at school. Gareth Bale's Real Madrid career has won, you know, he won them four Champions, you know, which won, directly won them two Champions League, won overall four Champions Leagues, yet never once, apart from one brief period, 2016, never looked like he was going to be the main man at the club. Still can't speak Spanish.
Guerrero doesn't speak English.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying and goes to bed at 11 o'clock instead of hanging out until 1 a.m. with his mates.
Him and Tony Cruz going to bed early.
Don't hate on the early nights, guys.
I'll tell you what, I would very much fit in with Madrid lifestyle if they're having coffee at 10 o'clock. I'd fit in with that. So I think, and this is bold, I think it's still been underwhelming.
Yeah.
And that's because of how much I value the talent he has. So for any normal man, that would be a brilliant career, and it has. He's got 100 goals. He's only got 4 fewer goals for Real Madrid than R9. That's crazy.
I think it's harsh to say it's underwhelming though, because for like however many seasons he was playing,
which is why it's an enigma,
next to Ronaldo. If he went and they actually said, right, we're going to build the team around you, Gareth, then it might have been different, but
injuries,
he's played second fiddle.
Yeah, and injuries, his calves keep exploding. I just think I know, and I think he could have been the best player in the world. He was the most expensive, and he showed all the talents that he could be. When he absolutely blitzed Mark Bartra for that Copa del Rey,
still running.
Underwhelming is harsh.
Yeah, it's harsh.
That overhead kick in the Champions League final.
I mean it. So underwhelming is perhaps wrong, but I mean it in such a positive way.
Enigma, guys. Yeah. Enigma.
Positively.
So let us know how you would describe Gareth Bale's career. That's the first one. The second one, another Welshman that's really quick. Daniel James is the fastest footballer in the world.
I mean, he's got to be at least second, because he's not quicker than Mbappe.
Third behind Mbappe and Dembele.
Yeah. Obviously, we have no
reason. Of course.
We have no way to actually judge this. And there are plenty of other fast footballers, but we couldn't go without the podcast without mentioning that incredible goal. against Brentford.
It's honestly, it's like watching like the older Pro Evo games. You know, when your run button wouldn't work and your opponent would just go
streak. Well, people talk about pace abuse being a lie on FIFA. He's just proven that pace is all that you need for a counter attack, reminiscent of an Mbappe goal against Lille where he just ran the whole length of the pitch and didn't even have a goalkeeper to beat. He just decided to display his speed. But Daniel James learned that he could have joined Leeds on transfer deadline day, which is interesting. Would have been someone with that amount of pace in a Bielsa system that is relentless would have been intriguing, but could have gone the same way as Gareth Bale, running that fast all the time. No calves.
No, he should not stay away from Bielsa. Because that
game was so open, all he kept doing.
About pace abuse, by the way. Bielsa would abuse that pace. Yeah. Not in a good way.
Not in a good way. Actual abuse of it. Do all of our running, Danny. That's Bielsa's accent, by the way. And the final one that we're going to do, because I'm wary of time, we spent loads of time on everything else. Blank will win the FA Cup this season.
Man United.
Oh.
Manchester City, because they're going to do a domestic treble.
When I heard Man, I thought, oh god, we're going to get a Man City clean sweep. Obviously this is before they've even played Chelsea, so you could look so silly within 2 hours of this podcast being on air.
Well, I don't think I'm going to look as silly as picking Arsenal for the winner the last time you asked me,
so you've got redemption. You didn't have to bring that up.
See, the thing is Man City's biggest problem is Liverpool, right? And Wigan, they're the two teams that beat them. Wigan aren't in the FA Cup, neither are Liverpool. So, ergo,
we've said Millwall could throw up.
I'd like to see them at the Den, but at the same time, it'd be fun because I think Millwall would really intimidate them, and then City would just ping, 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 ping past goal. You know, you bring on Leroy Sané and Raheem Sterling. Yeah. Honestly, you're not going to be able to kick them off the pitch, are you?
Foden, though. Yeah. FA Cup magician.
PH47.
So, Man United, why? This meant to be quick fire, but I was shocked.
Well, I've picked Man City to win everything else, and I don't think they're going to win the quadruple, so I've sort of hedged my bets and gone
for
United.
So this is going to be the one that they... We won't completely dominate, but giving it to Man United would leave a sour taste. I personally think anyone that cares, Man City as well.
Yeah.
Can't see it past the level of competition that's left. Wolves and Crystal Palace, final, potentially? The way that they play...
If they get a good draw,
Wolves,
you never know.
Yeah, Wolves... counter-attacking, proven to be good against big sides. Crystal Palace have frustrated a few big sides as well.
Well, got to the final.
Ones to keep an eye on. But, as I've said, time is running short. So, firstly, I'd just like to say thank you for my guests today. Mo, thank you.
Thank you for having me. It's been a great pleasure.
Sam, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
And then I would like to say thank you for everyone that has listened. Let us know what you thought of the new sections. And also, please rate and review the podcast. Subscribe, send it to your friends, send it to anyone that might want to listen to it, and we'll speak to you next week. Goodbye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.